If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When you get a cancer diagnosis, your world stops, but not Fox Chase Cancer Center. When the science moves quickly, we move quicker, because cancer is all we do. From the molecular level to the human level, we stay focused on your unique cancer, not just following the science, but discovering new paths forward, giving you a head start on better outcomes. Learn more at foxchase.org/where you start, because where you start matters.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
The U.S. has entered a new phase of its economy, dominated by tariffs. While President Trump agreed to take a pause on Canada and Mexico after they pledged stricter border enforcement, tariffs on China remain in place. And we're going to talk all about it. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial in New York. All right, Art, we have now entered the tariff phase of our economy, and that's where I wanted to start today. Just thoughts on the tariff battle so far and where things are headed.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the way to think about it is not just what we've learned over the course of this week, but what our assumptions were coming into this week. So to start with, what we've learned. So there was a trifecta of tariff concerns as we headed into Monday, and that was an announcement of a 25% tariff with two of our most important trading partners, Canada and Mexico, on top of a 10% increase in tariffs on China. So that came as a surprise because our expectations were that this Trump administration might look like the Trump administration of 2017 and 18, when tariffs were largely used more surgically. They were used as a negotiating tool to try to get concessions from our trading partners and then only applied to China. Well, lo and behold, that assumption was shook a little bit and markets took a big hit early Monday morning. But with a midnight deadline, we were actually able to see both Mexico and Canada come to the negotiating table and talk about some things that they could do to ameliorate those tariffs. And therefore, they were pushed out by a month. That's the good news. The bad news is China didn't do anything to ameliorate. As a matter of fact, they came back and said, here are the things we're going to put tariffs on in retaliation. So while two-thirds of that trifecta are likely in the rearview mirror for the time being, I think investors are still concerned about what the end game will be for China. I will tell you, China's got till February 8th before they retaliate. So I think that leaves a window open for them to get to the negotiating table and perhaps do some things that make the administration a little more comfortable, and perhaps those would be pulled back as well.
And a lot of this, I still think, and there are a lot of investors that agree with me, that's why we haven't seen nearly a big-time sell-off, is that this is, in a lot of ways, using or being used as a negotiation tool. You saw Canada and Mexico kind of come to terms, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. As a market player, though, how are you navigating all of this, and just thoughts on how this could play out in markets, Art?
Yeah, that's a great question. You certainly have to take things seriously, but you also can't take things literally. And I, you know, by that I mean there's going to be a lot of headlines, whether it's on trade or if, you know, new tax policies, et cetera, that are going to be scary until they're not. And I think that this falls into that category. So announcing over a weekend a tariff with two of our most important trade partners really opened up a huge total addressable market for tariff goods, right? So if you throw China, Mexico, and Canada together, that, you know, that equaled something close to $1.4 trillion in goods in any single year, versus what we saw back in 2018, which was about $380 billion worth of goods. So it would be, in effect, a much larger concern, unless and until we got to the place where we are now. To your point, both Canada and Mexico were able to negotiate to a place where tariffs aren't going to be likely placed on them, and they will continue to do things that the administration would like opening up some of their markets, but certainly closing up their borders.
And this comes as, in the background, you know, there's going to be a ton of deregulation that's going to be good for business and the economy. You know, energy is going to be unleashed, and that will play into it. So in the background, there's some underlying things that are good, and that could kind of help soften the blow a little bit. Thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that the lighter regulatory touch is probably the most important of what is going to be ushered in with this administration. So when we think about energy, it's really important that, you know, things get approved, whether it's, you know, places to drill or certainly putting in new pipelines, which we need to get the important fossil fuels that we take out of the ground to the places where we need them. That will certainly be a benefit to the energy industry. I don't think the energy industry is going to increase anywhere close to the amount of barrels per day, but they're going to be more efficient in distributing those barrels per day to the places we need them, and certainly going to continue to grow to be the global leader in liquefied natural gas. Then I think both of those are going to continue to be amazing positives for the energy sector. The other sector that really is going to benefit from a lighter regulatory touch is financials. Financials are, you know, the most regulated industry in the S&P 500, and a lighter regulatory touch there releases capital that can go into things like mergers and acquisitions, can certainly go into buybacks, and certainly help with increasing dividends, something we haven't seen for the better part of a dozen years. I think on that front, that positive tailwind likely has been ignored while we've been tiptoeing around what tariffs might look like. I think the more we learn about tariffs and the more they surgically applied or used as a negotiating tool, the more we'll start focusing on the positives, which will certainly be that lighter regulatory touch and the industries that's likely going to help.
Give me a couple names that you like. You mentioned energy, financials. You know, I love Chevron right now, just waiting for the breakout there. I like J.P. Morgan, ticker JPM. Your thoughts on that those two sectors and anything in particular that you like there?
Yeah, so the two names in, or three names in energy that you hit on, one of my favorites, Chevron, trading at a very unchallenging multiple, one of the most efficient players of the fully integrateds. They made their numbers, but they're disappointing in a shift in inventories, which I think took something out of the stock. I think it's going to break out this year. I think it pays a very nice dividend. Another North American E&P play called Devon Energy. They're in all of the right spaces, and again, a very unchallenged multiple and pays a very nice dividend. The third is Cheniere LNG, the biggest player in LNG in the United States. They've gone from being a CapEx payer to a harvester of that capital, and they are actually unbelievably reasonably valued. But I think there's going to be an LNG revolution where the United States provides LNG to all the places that need it, and it's going to be a much safer provider versus the places that a lot of places like the Eurozone are getting it from Russia. So I think those are the three players that I would talk about in terms of how we look at the energy sector. But, you know, we like it overall. You can play it with an ETF, whether you look at the overall XLE or whether you look at some of the service providers. On the flip side of that, over in financials, JP Morgan's been our top pick and has been for 3 years. Obviously a rock solid balance sheet, one of the best management teams in the country. The most expensive, but for a reason. If you're looking for one of the players that's a turnaround play, I would point you to both Wells Fargo and Citibank in the money center banks, but JP Morgan is head and shoulders above the rest of the money center banks. But I wouldn't sleep on some of the investment banks too, especially the names that are going to do the heavy lifting in M&A. We haven't seen a lot of mergers and acquisitions getting approved over the course of the last 4 years. We're going to see that approval process probably have an easier glide path this year. So think about the investment banks, both Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley jump out in that realm.
One other, since we're talking blue chips, one other lagger, it seemed, is pharma. I'm thinking J&J, Merck, Amgen. Thoughts on that sector as well, as it has lagged?
It certainly has lagged. It's lagged for, I would say, for two important reasons. First and foremost, pharma goes through cycles, right? So, and the cycle we just came out of was the sort of, you know, you need to have either a COVID vaccine or a COVID therapeutic. And that quickly cycled into the new period where you needed to have a GLP-1 diabetes weight loss drug. And everything else largely gets ignored when we have that, you know, that tentpole sector that you know, gets all the investment dollars. We're cycling out of that GLP-1 fascination right now. And I think all the names like Pfizer, who just reported yesterday and had a great report, and the stock is still lackluster. I think the problem, though, the second reason that the group has been in a bit of a doldrum, if you will, is that we're not really sure what pharma companies will do in an administration where RFK Jr. is in charge of HHS, and what that means for all sorts of things like the approval of vaccines, the approval of new drugs. And I think that likely is being overblown. You know, while RFK Jr. certainly has a long history of being sort of an anti-vax guy, I certainly think where the rubber meets the road, the approval rate and the recognition of what pipelines look like for all of the names you mentioned, in particular Merck, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and certainly Amgen. And if you look at valuations across the space, because of this doldrum we've been in, where everyone's focused on either GLP-1s or the concern over what this new administration means, I think there's going to be a great deal of value, and I think healthcare will likely be one of the best performing sectors in the S&P 500 this year.
My pick in the pharma space, been dollar cost averaging in probably over the last 3 months. I love Amgen out of the pharmas that we had mentioned. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be back with Art right after the break. Back with Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. All right, Art, now let's move over to technology. You know, AI, trade, technology, that had been the mover for markets for like 2-3 years. Do you see technology still having that prominent role? There's still a lot of interesting things with AI. You know, valuations got a little frothy, but just thoughts on that space, AI specifically, and then technology at large.
Yeah, so I think this is a great question and a great pivot point. So it was 2 weeks ago over the weekend that DeepSeek, a Chinese AI startup that was started in 2023 by a hedge fund manager, and allegedly they've come up with a large language model that brought out a new chatbot, and that's the DeepSeek R1 that looked like it was actually produced for less than $6 million using lower powered NVIDIA chips.
Well, now, Art, you know it's distillation. I'm convinced right. This one's distillation. You know, you're familiar with that 100%. Term. Explain yeah, that because. I think a lot of people are with me on this, that there's a good chance this is distillation. Go ahead, explain. Sorry.
Yeah, so basically that means if you have an open architecture like OpenAI does, you can actually look at their APIs, use the large language models that they already have, take less power and less energy and less compute power to actually build your language models off of what they've already done, the work they've already done. So to the extent that you are not training, the distillation process means you're using someone else's model and then creating your own unique model off of that. So, of course, that uses less energy, less compute power, et cetera. But the other thing that we have to take a step back from is, do we actually believe that they released this and told us everything they did? My contention, not only that this is distillation, meaning you're scraping someone else's large language model in open architecture using their APIs, but you're also telling us that all of what you spent was this. When you take a step back and try to believe what comes out of China in terms of actual data versus fabricated data, my guess is it likely cost them close to $1 billion. And I think the way they did that was they backed into some chips that probably went through Singapore that were bought by the Chinese government. They had access to that. They probably used a whole lot more compute power. But at the end of the day, let's say we're getting more efficient. Let's say there actually have been some progress that's made. That is what we expect, right? You know, at the very start, it's going to take several hyperscalers to develop some very sophisticated large language models, but that's the first step. And AI doesn't start with a stop with a cute chatbot on your phone. The next step is inference, and the long-term goal is to get to AGI. And we're nowhere close to that. So I think the AI revolution is still in the first couple of innings. We've got a lot more to go. But I do think what we're going to see as a shift this year is it's not just going to be about the chip makers. It's not just going to be about NVIDIA and Taiwan Semiconductor. While they're still going to have huge revenue growth, I think it's the software companies that are going to be beneficiaries. They're actually going to be the folks that collect the revenue with artificial intelligence are going to be the next winners this year. So it's a bit of a transition from hardware to software. The hardware is not going to be left in the dust. They're still going to grow nicely, but software companies are actually going to start producing that revenue. They're going to be the beneficiaries of a broad acceptance of artificial intelligence at lower price.
Well, give us a couple names in the tech space that you like right now and you'd be willing to deploy some cash.
Well, and we'd still be market weight in NVIDIA. I think they're going to grow the revenues. We just heard from all the hyperscalers. They just reported, including Alphabet last night and Amazon later this week. But the billions of dollars that are still going to go into NVIDIA chips are still there. We don't see any pullback in CapEx spend for NVIDIA chips well into 2026. So those names are certainly going to be key players. The hyperscalers continue to benefit from this. So we love Amazon. It's one of our top picks. Microsoft hasn't been this cheap in years. I certainly think Oracle is a new name on our list. And Meta continues to show that they're going to find ways to actually capitalize and monetize the money that they've been spending. Now, on the energy side of the transition trade, which I think is important, there's a couple of names that we like, and one of those is Entergy ETR. It's a traditional power providers, but it's in all the areas that data centers are actually being built right now. And if you want to take one step further in this AI trade, we certainly like names like Caterpillar Tractor. You need a lot of that equipment to make your data centers, and we like United Rentals, URI. A couple of industrial names, which you don't usually think about when you talk about artificial intelligence, but that's the secondary and tertiary plays to this. We're building data centers across the country. We need the power, and we certainly need the industrial equipment to get that done.
Love that take, actually. You know, other industries that could also benefit from this wave. Finally, you got the jobs report on Friday. The Fed has kind of been in play. Thoughts on the economic background, how the jobs report's going to come out, and how this is all going to impact markets?
Yeah, so we exited 2024 with an average of about 180,000 jobs being created on a monthly basis. That's a very solid number. It's a number that's actually north of what we need to keep full employment necessarily. So that's good. And the unemployment rate as we exited the year is 4.1%. I think we can live in a world where we're averaging 150,000 jobs being created a month. That might be the case with some of the immigration laws and changes there, and still have full employment at or about 4%. And I think that number that comes out on Friday will be right about there. I think as the Fed looks at this, though, and says, I have two mandates. One is full employment, which they have, and the other is stable pricing, which has been sticky getting down to their 2% target. So the Fed has now gotten to a place where they can take some time to make their next move. And they can also take some time to see what the new administration's policies do for economic growth and what they do for inflation. So I suspect the Fed is not going to raise rates until the second quarter. Until the second quarter of this year. They've got time. They've allowed themselves some time to watch that first 100 days of the new administration and see what kind of impact some of these policies have, both positive and negative, on the economy.
And then finally, as we wrap up the Gains podcast, what's your takeaway from today's convo? Final thoughts.
Well, I would tell you this. I think we're going to see some overreactions in markets as we're at or near all-time highs, or 2% away from all-time highs. So it's really important as an investor not to overreact to any given headline. DeepSeek, reveals the Temu of artificial intelligence, and there was a massive overreaction in markets. That was actually a buying opportunity for most of the names that were affected by that. In a similar fashion, Monday morning, you come in after hearing about potential tariffs to two of our most important trading partners and forgot about how this played out in 2018. Don't overreact to headlines. The economy is strong. Earnings growth has been spectacular in the fourth quarter and is going to be even better in 2025. So please don't overreact to headlines and stay the course.
Yeah, it's been interesting. If you've been bold during these last two news events and bought the dip, it actually worked out pretty good, huh, Art?
It certainly has, and that just tells you that that's where we're at right now. It's about the economy and it's about earnings. Headlines move stocks on a minute-by-minute and hour-by-hour basis, but earnings move stocks over the long term. And we, you know, we're going to have in the fourth quarter about 13.5% or 14% earnings growth, and next year we're going to be even better than that in 2025. And estimates for 2025 haven't budged, even with more than half of the S&P 500 companies reporting. So pay attention to the fundamentals and don't pay attention to the scary headlines.
Big thanks to Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial in New York. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. And I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.